on a cold day, but you did, and we just want to thank you very much for that. I want to tell y'all about some track stars that we have in this church, and I mean that. I went to a track meet on Thursday in Crandall, and I saw three of our kids run. I saw Timothy McDaniel literally smoke people in the mile run. He not only won, he beat these people. I mean, he could not hear the sound of any cleats behind him. Let me put it that way. He beat them really bad. Ran a personal best, ran a 5:57. 5:57 for an eighth grader. This is coming from a former track person. That's really good for an eighth grader, Timothy. You keep it up. You're gonna do very well. And then I saw Cambry Phillips. That girl is something else. She ran the anchor leg on the 4x100-meter relay and smoked everybody. Then she ran the hurdles, 100-meter hurdles, and smoked everybody. And then as I was leaving, because it was cold and I didn't have enough clothes on, she ran the opening leg of the mile relay, which is a quarter, one lap around the track, and she probably was ahead by about 60 yards, looked to me from my vehicle as I was getting in it. And that's, she was smoking people. And then I saw Jake Van Landingham, that is one of Amy Noble's grandsons. I saw him, he beat people so bad, they may just quit running against him. He is really good. He's an eighth grader, is that correct? Eighth grader. Last year, as an eighth grader, he ran a 52-second quarter mile. Now, if you're not a track person, let me tell you, that's stupid good. That's ridiculous. That's a high school. I went to a gigantic high school in West Texas, and a 52, that's a junior or senior in high school time at a real big high school. So we have some really good kids here. I just want to tell all of our kids, whether you're a track star, whether you're in something else, even if you're in soccer, yes. We love our kids at this church. We love our teenagers. We love our young children. We want to support them. And we want you to know that we're behind you, but the most important thing in your life is not that you're a track star or whatever other kind of thing you're in. The most important thing is that you carry Jesus with you wherever we go. And that's what we want to help you do. I want to let everybody know, we are starting today. We're starting a process to select some additional shepherds in our church. And this is the process that we've come up with. Elders and ministers have been meeting we've had several lengthy meetings recently. And we're all in agreement. This is the process. It's on the front page of your bulletin. And so I'm going to begin my part today, which is doing some teaching, because we don't want to just select anybody, and we certainly don't want to use worldly wisdom who we're going to select. We want to listen to what Jesus said, and we want to listen to what inspired writers said about the kind of men you are looking for. So for the next four sermons, beginning today and concluding on Sunday, March 10th, I'll be doing some teaching, and then at that point, that's when the congregation will have your part, based upon what you heard, to nominate some men who fit the biblical criteria that you have seen. And then you see, we'll be sorting through those men, talking with them, and on April the 21st, Lord willing, we'll have some new shepherds who will agree to help serve this church. And I want to say this, I'm going to say it every Sunday, but in a recent meeting, notice it's called a shepherd selection process. We have been, and it's a biblical term to call them elders. Elders or shepherds or overseers or bishop. Those are all biblical terms. But we agreed in that meeting the other night, we're going to start from this point on, we're going to refer to them as shepherds. And here is why. The term elder is a biblical term, but that doesn't describe what they do. That simply means a person who has age and experience and wisdom behind them. But that doesn't describe what you do. Shepherd is what they are to do. We're to be looking for shepherds, men who are with the flock, who care about the flock, who are attending, not only attending with the flock, but they are attending to the flock. That's the kind of men that we're to be looking for. And I want everybody to know also, this doesn't only apply. You may be thinking right now, well, I can tune out because this doesn't apply to me. Oh, yes, it does. Leadership principles in Scripture that we're going to look at today from the words of Jesus, they apply to all of us, because every single one of us in some aspect of our life, we are leading in some kind of way, and we need to know how to properly do that as Jesus talked about, regardless of whether you're a leader on a track team, as I've already talked about, Or you're a leader in a business or a leader in your home or whatever aspect you're leading. We need to know what it means to be a Christian leader. But especially I want us to be thinking about the men that you all will nominate here in just a few weeks. We've been looking at this year. We're focusing on Jesus. What does he say in his word? What are his works? What are his ways? And we want to be like that. And the theme verse I came up with is this great one in John chapter 15, verse 5, where Jesus said, "I'm the vine and you're in the branches. Those who remain in me and I in them will produce much fruit, because apart from me, you can do nothing." And that especially applies to leadership. If we want to be the kind of leaders that Jesus calls us to be, and specifically today we're talking about church leaders, meaning your shepherds, meaning your ministers, meaning your deacons especially. If we're going to be the kind of leaders God has called us to be, we have to listen to Jesus. We have to stay closely connected to Jesus, because Jesus said, apart from him, we can do nothing. And we greatly need to hear the words of Jesus, because our country is in a leadership crisis. Let me show you an example. Brief history lesson. You probably recognize, or most of you recognize, these people. This is former president of the United States in the 1970s, Richard Nixon, only sitting president who ever had to resign. He resigned in August of 1974 because of a big scandal. We've all heard of it, the Watergate scandal. Watergate's the name of a hotel in Washington, D.C. He and some people that he put up to it were accused of spying, and it was just a bad, bad fiasco. And then you might recognize this gentleman right here. This is a Republican Party. This is a Democratic Party. I'm not being biased towards either one. There's corruption all the way across. Bill Clinton had a scandal with this young lady right here named Monica Lewinsky. Some of us who are a little bit older, you probably remember that. And it's not only in the political realm that there's bad leadership, but down here. How many of you recognize this couple right here? That's a religious couple, religious leaders. Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, they ran a club called the PTL Club, Praise the Lord Club. They were accused of sexual scandal, financial scandal, fraud, ripping people off, etc. And then in the business world, you might remember this guy right here and a company named Enron. This has just been in the past 15 years or so. Big company, big oil company, and the head of that company, the CEO, his name is Ken Lay. They were accused of fraud. They were accused of money laundering, ripping people off, all kinds of things. He ended up in prison. My point is, the reason that people are so skeptical, and people are, ever since about the 1960s, people in our country have been skeptical of just about any kind of institution, whether it be a political institution, a government institution, or even a church institution. People are very skeptical about any kind of organization at all. That's why you hear so many people today say, "Well, I love Jesus, but I don't care about organized religion," because there's been one scandal after another, and it all goes back to a crisis of leadership. But Jesus showed us a new way to do leadership. He gave us a perfect model. And brothers and sisters, for those of us who claim to be followers of Jesus, who we need to look to and what we need to look to for our model and for our guidelines on what leadership is about, we don't need to look to the world and what the world says, because it's been a fiasco, as I just showed. We need to listen to what Jesus said. Wouldn't you all agree with that? Let me tell you a story that I heard this week. There was a story that on a cold winter's night, a winter storm was brewing, snow was falling, the wind was howling. A doctor received an urgent phone call at his house, and the caller said that his wife needed medical attention, and it was an emergency. And the doctor was very understanding, and he said, "Well, I'd be glad to come out to your house, but my car is being repaired. Could you please come and get me?" And the man replied, he said, "Are you kidding me in weather like this?" He wanted the doctor to come, but he wouldn't go get him. His attitude was all about serve us, not serve is. And that attitude of serve us, I expect you to do for me, but I don't want to put out anything for you, is one of the biggest problems that we have in the world today. But when you listen to the words and you see the ways of Jesus, we're going to see something radically different from him. So I'm going to start today in this passage in Matthew chapter 19, verse 30, and then in chapter 20, verse 16. Many who are first will be last, and the last will be first. This is the first words and the last words, kind of like bookends, that Jesus taught when he was teaching a parable. It's called the parable of the laborers in the vineyard. You're probably familiar with that story. These laborers started at different times, and they were all paid the exact same amount of money. And the point that Jesus is trying to make in that story is, fallen human nature, we still have this problem today, fallen human nature likes to think that somehow we are more deserving and better than other people, and we want to have a one-up on them. What Jesus is teaching in this parable is, at the foot of the cross, the ground is level. We're all at the same place. It doesn't matter who you are, what your background is, how long you've been in the church, how little a time you've been in the church. We're all saved in the exact same way, and that's by the grace of Jesus Christ. And yet, even when Jesus taught this, the very next thing after this that is said is this. This is what the mother of the sons of James and John says this to Jesus. In your kingdom, please let my two sons sit in places of honor next to you, one at your right and one at your left. To me, this is amazing. Right after Jesus just taught, it's not about rank, it's not about status, it's not about authority, it's not about you deserving anything, it's all about God's grace. He said, but hey, can my sons have the greatest places of honor in your kingdom? They had a lot of ambition, but they were thinking in terms of serve us, not serve us. It was a problem then, and it's still a problem now. And so to correct their thinking, and hopefully to correct our thinking, we need to listen to the words of Jesus and see the ways of Jesus, which he's plainly going to show us today. So Jesus, to correct them, says this. He says, you know that the rulers of this world, they lord it over their people, and officials, they flaunt their authority over those who are under them, but among you it will be different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first among you must become your slave. Now, this is not what you hear in the business world. And unfortunately, sometimes it's not what is seen in practice, even in the church. But this is what Jesus said. There are some men in this room right now who will be nominated and will be considered to be an additional shepherd leader in this church. I want you to know something. Jesus said, among you it'll be different. A leader is not a person who has a position of authority to domineer other people and to boss and rule over them. That's the way of the world, but that's not what Jesus said it was all about. It's not about bossing, Jesus said. It's about serving. And then he goes on and he says, for even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others and to give his life as a ransom for many. Jesus said, I can say this authoritatively because this is what my whole life is about. I didn't come here to receive. I came here to give the ultimate sacrifice, to pour myself out for other people. And if you're going to be a leader in my kingdom, this is what it's going to be like with you as well. Now, here's what I find fascinating. Right after this teaching, there's a story where these two blind men are on the side of the road and they're crying out and they're trying to get the attention of Jesus. But nobody is paying any attention to them because, after all, they're blind men and nobody pays any attention to them because they don't matter. That was the thinking of people at the time. In fact, this story is recorded not only in Matthew's gospel, it's also recorded in Mark's account, and it's also recorded in Luke's account. And in all three accounts, what you see the people doing is they're telling these blind men to shh, shh, be quiet. And the reason they're saying that is because don't disturb Jesus, because after all, Jesus is an important person and he doesn't have time to stop and pay attention to people like you. But here's what Jesus does. Jesus hears them. And Jesus does stop. Even though he was on an important mission, he stops. And he goes over to these blind men, and he asks them what he can do for them. And they say, we want to receive our sight, and he heals them. Now, here's the point that I'm making. Remember the triangle just a few moments ago? Jesus is in the middle. We're learning about his words. We're also learning about his ways. Jesus is showing us here what leadership is all about. He's just done some teaching on it. Now he's going to show us. Leadership is about people, brothers and sisters. And for Jesus, the most important people in the world, the people that he paid attention to, were not just the VIPs. To Jesus, everybody was a VIP. If you want to be a leader in the Lord's kingdom, it means paying attention to people. People who are crying out. Even the people who most people overlook. What a leader does, a leader notices others and pays attention to them and will step aside and will spend time to them. That's a great example of leadership. The next story I want to tell us is this one in John chapter 13. And this is really a similar story. But it says, before the Passover celebration, Jesus knew that his hour had come to leave this world and return to his Father. And he had loved his disciples during his ministry on earth, and now he loved them to the very end. Or your version might say to the very extent, or something of that nature. And it was time for supper, meaning this was the Passover meal. It was time for supper, and the devil had already prompted Judas, who was the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. And Jesus knew that the Father had given him authority over everything, that he had come from God and he was returning to God. And so he got up from the table, he took off his robe, and he wrapped a towel around him, around his waist. Now, a couple of things that I want to point out about these verses. Especially the section there where it says Jesus loved them to the very end. He's talking about these disciples, these apostles that he's chosen. He loved them to the very end. Now let's talk about what kind of guys he's loving to the very end and to the fullest extent possible. When you read your Bible, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, I get the distinct impression these are all not the sharpest guys in the world. These are not the people who, you know, probably were Rhodes Scholars. A lot of them were common fishermen, just ordinary working guys. And it's very obvious when you read the Bible, they had no clue what Jesus was talking about half the time. They had no clue. They were very unreliable. You might remember when Jesus is going to be crucified, which is just the very next day. He's saying this on the night before he's crucified. The very next day, you remember, at the crucifixion, they all abandoned him. Remember that? Peter denied him three times. And despite their inconsistencies, and despite their lack of faith and their lack of commitment, it says Jesus loved them to the very end. He said that even when he knew one of them in their midst, Judas, is going to betray him. Now, I want to say that to leaders. Here's what it means to be a leader. Dealing with people is not easy. I think everybody in here knows that. To one extent or another, everybody in here deals with people. People will disappoint you. I want you to know something. Though I'm not trying to scare off potential shepherds in this church. I'm just being real with you. The people in this congregation sometimes will disappoint you. Sometimes I'll disappoint you. Sometimes they won't be consistent. Sometimes they won't have a great amount of faith. But what a leader does is love them anyway, to the fullest extent. Jesus never abandoned them, even when they abandoned him. That's what it means to be a true leader. And notice what else it says. I highlighted there, Jesus knew, Jesus knew. Jesus knew what was going to happen. He knew his crucifixion was coming, and he knew what that was going to entail, all the horror of it, but he also knew the exaltation that was going to take place after it. 3 days later, he's going to be raised from the dead, and eventually he's going to ascend into heaven to the right hand of the throne of God as the ruler of this universe. He knew that, and despite the fact that he knew he was going to be exalted above everything that there is, notice what he does. When they're having the supper, he gets out a bowl full of water and a towel, girds himself with a towel, and he goes around and he begins washing the feet of all of the disciples. This was a very, very lowly job, menial task. In fact, it was so lowly that even a Jewish slave was not required to do this. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm not a foot person. We have some feet people here. You know, you don't buy. I wouldn't want to do that. Stinky. Even if you just now, you know, went to the nail and pedicure place and got, you know, your feet done and all that. Still, I'm like, feet. I'm not a feet person. This is not a nice task, and especially for the kind of feet that these would have been. Walking in sandals on dry, dusty roads all day where your feet just kind of get, you know, clogged up with all kinds of dirt and everything, this would have been a stinky, smelly, messy job. And none of the disciples volunteered to do it. Jesus does it. He gets up from supper and he goes around and he begins performing this most menial of all tasks, and he does it to every single one of them. How many of you would have been like me when you got to Judas? Wouldn't you be tempted to just skip him? I would have. Jesus doesn't skip him. Jesus washes his feet as well. And then at the end of this story, he says this, "Since I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. I've given you an example to follow. Do as I've done to you." And then he said, "If you know these things," he said, "you are blessed if you do them." I want you to notice something. Jesus does the act of service before he does the teaching here in John's Gospel. Did you notice that? First, he performs the act. He washes their feet. And it's after that, then he does this teaching right here. "I've given you an example. Now that you know these things, you're blessed if you do them." What we typically do is, we typically do the teaching first, and then we do the example. But if you do the example first and you show people the extent that you're willing to go, I think they're much more likely to take it seriously. Let me give you an example. I was reading this week a story about the great general from World War II, General Patton. I'm sure we've all heard of him. I'm sure Clay has. Clay could probably come up here and teach a lot better lesson on this than I could. But on one occasion, General Patton was leading his men. They were marching through a war-torn area. And as they were marching, they were very cold. It was a very cold, rainy day. All of the men were overcome from exhaustion from carrying all their heavy artillery and all their packs and everything. And to make matters worse, they came upon a river that they were going to need to cross in order to reach their destination. And upon coming to the river, all the soldiers began mumbling and complaining to each other that it's going to be impossible for them to cross the river in conditions like this. And so, General Patton, listening to all those complaints, with all of his gear on, his pack, and all his heavy equipment, he wades out into this river, and he crosses that river, and then when he gets on the other side of the river, he said, "Do you think you can do it now?" And then he wades back to them. "Do you think you can do it now?" And then they all begin to cross the river. And that's what Jesus does. He does the example of service first, the most lowly and menial of all tasks, and then he does the teaching. And notice what he says. "If you know these things, you're blessed if you do them." Notice what Jesus didn't say. He didn't say you're blessed if you know them. He didn't say you're blessed if you learn these things. That's not what Jesus said. Jesus said there's no blessing in knowing it. Brothers and sisters, we all know this. Jesus said you're blessed if you do it. And let me point out something else that I think is really, really important. What John is writing this for, and who he's writing to a church. And he's saying leadership in the church is all about service, even for people who will betray you, people sometimes that you don't like, people who are inconsistent. Brothers and sisters, it is a lot harder to serve and to love people the way that Jesus is calling us to when you know them really well, isn't it? It's a lot easier to do this when we don't know the people well. But Jesus is saying, "I want you church people, people like us." And let me just be blunt here. There are people in this room right now, I'm sure, I'm not privy to every situation, of course, But I'm certain there are people in this room, for whatever reason, don't get along together. That happens sometimes in a church. You've had some kind of minor disagreement with someone, and it's caused you not to be the best of friends with someone else. Jesus says, I want you to act like this toward them. You're like, that's hard to do. Yeah, I know. That's what he's calling us to. That's what it means to be a servant, and that's what it means to be a leader. To be a leader means to be a servant. And so as I conclude here, this is a little phrase I came up with that kind of encapsulizes this teaching that Jesus is calling us to, and it's this: Christian leadership is about service. It is not about serve us. We all live in a culture of serve us. Look at me. Jesus said, that's not leadership. Leadership is about serve is. I want to read a great quote that I found from one of the greatest preachers that's ever lived. His name was Charles Spurgeon, lived in the 1800s and taught in London, England, to massive crowds, thousands of people, even before they had microphones. Listen to what he said. He said, if there is a position in the church where the worker will have to toil hard and get no thanks for it, take it and be pleased with it. If you can perform a service which few will ever seek to do themselves or appreciate when performed by others, you need to occupy that with holy delight. And then he says, you need to covet humble work. And when you get it, be content to continue in it. There is no great rush after the lowest places, and you will rob no one by seeking them. Jesus has called us to be servants, all of us. And that's what it means to be a leader. Now here's the amazing thing. In this passage in Luke chapter 22, Jesus says, I'm among you as the one who serves. This passage is a passage where this is the same context where the disciples, right after Jesus does this foot washing and shows this great example of humble service in light of the greatest self-sacrifice that was ever to be given the very next day when Jesus was crucified on the cross. It was right after that when they had this argument about which one was going to be the greatest. It's just in our human DNA to be great and to be exalted over others. Jesus said, I'm among you as one who serves. I want everybody in here to know, here in a couple of weeks, when our church looks out among itself and starts looking for the kind of men that I'm going to be teaching about for the next 3 weeks, the kind of men we're looking for are not people who are about serve us, it's about service. And who are you looking for? You're looking for people who have already been doing it. That's who you're looking for. Look out among our congregation. Who are the men that you have seen already over months and years? You've seen them expend themselves on behalf of other people, even when it costs them a lot, and they do menial tasks that nobody else wants to do. That's who you're looking for. That's what it means to be a servant. That's what it means to be a leader. Being a leader is not about having a title. It's about a position of service. And that's what it means to be a Christian as well. That's what Jesus is calling all of us to. I'm among you as one who serves. And if he is our model, we do that in whatever arena that we're in. You know, as Jesus closed this teaching in John chapter 13, he said in John chapter 13, verse 8, you might remember as he went around, he was washing all the feet of the apostles. Remember when he got to Peter? Peter said, oh no, not my feet. And then Jesus said this in verse 8, unless I wash you, you don't belong to me. I want to apply that this way. Brothers and sisters, unless we have allowed Jesus to wash us, we don't belong to him. The only way that you can belong to Jesus and have your sins forgiven and be a part of his family is if we allow him to wash us. I think that is probably an allusion to Christian baptism, which is a very humble thing. We humble ourselves, we allow another person to put us under water. It is saying, Lord, I know I can't save myself. The only way I can have salvation is if I submit to you. And so I want to ask everybody here today, have you submitted to Jesus? Ken's going to lead us in an invitation song here in just a moment. And we do this at this church because we're giving people an opportunity to respond to what we've heard. Jesus said, you're blessed not only if you hear these things, you're blessed if you do them. So maybe there's some response that you need to make. We've also created an additional way to respond at this church in a more private manner. In my office, just to the right down here, right across from the gym, there'll be two couples in there today, my wife and I and Joe and Eloise Priest. For anybody who wants to come and maybe you have something on your heart you would like us to counsel with you over or pray about, it doesn't have to be about Christian leadership. It can be about anything that's going on in your life. We'll listen to you. We'll talk with you. We'll pray with you. So you have those two ways that you can respond today. If we can help you in any way, please allow us to serve you. Let's all be standing together as Ken leads us in the song.